Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Learning at Shari. Those who are joining us in person, those who are joining us in Zoom, I hope everyone is having a meaningful week. So we are learning, as always, the Lui Nishmasa and the Zecha Nishmasa, Miriam Frun, Miriam Paschai Mitzak, Allah HaShalom, may her neshama have a continuous aliyah in the schus of the Torah learning that we will share. We thank the Frun family very, very much for their continued dedication to this shir, the Zecha Nishmas, their mother. So we are continuing our topic of last week. Yeah?
Can we get the safer?
No, because I'm continuing the topic from last week.
Okay,
that's what I was just saying. Okay, I'm continuing the topic from last week. I mentioned that I thought it was going to be two parts. We began last week honest exploration and confrontation with our challenges with technology, because the last thing we learned in the Sefer was the idea of slavery, that it is easier to be a slave, even though the person knows that when you get to the next world, you try and explain to them, when you get to the next world, there's going to be a better relationship with the Shechina if you were a free person in this world, but yet they want to remain in Shibud, in slavery. And this is a human tendency. Yes?
I made a Kabbalah.
You made?
A Kabbalah.
A Kabbalah.
Last week. That I wouldn't go onto my phone and start scrolling until after I davened.
You wouldn't go onto your phone?
Until after I davened.
Oh, so I'm going to talk about that tonight. I'm going to talk about that tonight.
So freeing.
Okay.
A real sense of freedom.
Interesting. So I'm just going to talk about that. That's why my chumash is open to Perek Yud Ches of Bereishis. The idea of not going onto your phone after last week's shir, taking a Kabbalah upon yourself, not to, you know, everyone does what works for them, not to go on your phone after your daven. So I'm mamish have a chumash here. I'm going to be addressing that topic. But what you said is that you really feel a sense of freedom. So let's go. Well, I'm going to start with a story from this Sefer, Heroes of Faith by Rabbi David Hoffman. There's two parts in this, Heroes of Faith and Heroes of Spirit. A lot of the stories are taken from Chassidic Tales of the Holocaust by Yefa Aliach. But the reason I want to start dafka with this is because Esty Klein, who I see is not here tonight, or maybe she's not here yet, I don't know. She'll hear on the recording that I'm quoting from her. At the end of last week's class, she made a comment on Zoom. Class was already over, but she made a comment on Zoom that this gives new meaning to the brach of Shalom Asani Aved. Now we say in the Birkas HaShachar in the morning, we bless God for a number of things, and one of them is, you have not made me a slave. So she said that this is the idea of Shalom Asani Aved. It doesn't just mean physical slavery, but we're exploring this idea of being enslaved, really, to technology. So I'm quoting from Heroes of Faith, 100 Rabbinic Tales of the Holocaust. So it's a story called A God-Fearing Jew Can Never Be a Slave. And I actually picked up the Sefer to find the story for, I was looking for a totally different shir. But when I found this, I realized that this is really related to this idea. So here we go. In the waning days of the Kovno ghetto, the remaining Jews were made to undergo torturous suffering at the hands of the Germans and their bloodthirsty Lithuanian cohorts. Each day, the Jews were marched outside of the city and forced to labor in the fields, laying the foundation for a new airport that was to be used by the accursed Nazis. From morning to night, the ragged Jews were beaten into submission. It wasn't long before the entire ghetto was liquidated and the Jews were killed. Each morning before they were marched off to work, a minyan for Shachrus was held clandestinely. One day, as the Baal Tefillah was saying the Birkas HaShachar out loud, he paused by the blessing, Shalom Asani Goy, blessed are you Hashem, who has not made me a slave. The people waited for him to continue, but instead, with terrible anguish in his voice, he cried out and he said, is this a joke? Can a person who is beaten daily and forced into oppressive labor at the hands of a merciless master really give thanks that he is not a slave? What is he if not a slave? How can I say these words if I don't really believe them? His outburst caused an uproar in the small minyan. Fortunately, the Kovno Rav, Rav Avram Kahana Shapira, Hashem Yinkom Damo, was present at the minyan, and he immediately calmed down the situation. Walking over to the angry man, I can't say we have to understand they were in Gehenem, because we can't understand that they were in Gehenem. And I'm not comparing any of our relationships to technology to the situation in which these Jews found ourselves. But the idea that Esty Klein commented, Mamish, at the very end, that it gives new meaning, that last week's shir, Tishalo Asani Ava, this is really what I thought of when I saw this story. So the Kovna Rav, Hashem Yinkom Damo, walked over to the angry man, and he said to him, you are making a mistake. This blessing is not talking about physical slavery, but rather spiritual bondage.
I thought you said Shalom Asani Goy.
I'm quoting from this book.
I thought you said Shalom Asani Goy.
I meant Shlomo Sonny Oved. Oh. If I said Shlomo Sonny Goy, thank you. It was a typo of my mouth. Okay. Mistake. It's about Shlomo Sonny Oved. Last time you also caught me. I was talking about Alifas and Amalek, and I gave the whole genealogy wrong. Okay, you stay on your toes, and you'll keep me on my toes. This blessing is not talking about physical slavery. Shalo Asani Oved. Rather, said the Kovner Rav, it's talking about spiritual bondage. It is true that the Germans wish to crush and destroy us by means of false hopes and deception. And it is true that all of us who are imprisoned in the ghetto exist under the sentence of death. And yet, no matter what situation a Jew finds himself in, he must never lose his faith. In his mind and heart, he can always and will always be a free man. And it's so interesting because you said that you took upon yourself not to check your phone before you daven, and you feel like freedom. So, of course, you should be making this blessing, Shalo Asani Oved, because a God-fearing Jew can never be a slave. So when I came across this story, it really did remind me of Estes Klein's final comment, even though she's not here, right at the end. She was already over, and she wrote that it gives new meaning to Shalo Asani Oved. So we are continuing our share of last week. Like last week, I'm going to ask for no comments, please. Not because... because of the subject matter. I know it's a difficult subject matter. It might make us uncomfortable. I'm going to ask for no comments as I go through the material that I prepared. So we're talking an honest talk about our challenges with technology. And I marked down where we ended, and we're going to pick up. We are in the middle of advice from Rabbi Yitzi Ross, who is a Rabbi, well, known, beloved, successful Rabbi at the Yeshiva of South Shore. And we're going to continue. He compiled a list based on parents' advice of what to do to help us all as we battle this idea. Remember, where we are up to in the Sefer, just to reframe for all of us, the last thing we learned about, even though I said in the beginning of Shir, is that a person would rather be a slave than be a free man. And it is clear if he will leave this world as a slave, his spiritual level and closest to Hashem in the next world will be much lower than if he leaves as a free man. What's better? To be free. What does he think? He wants to remain a slave. And that's really the springboard for this last week's shir and for tonight's shir as well. So Rabbi Yitzi Ross continues, okay? Nakuda number 9, piece of advice number 9 to help your children. Get them invited on play dates that aren't into these devices. It's easy enough to call parents and be honest. I'm trying to wean my child off the electronics. Do they play other things? It really is odd when a group of boys sit around and watch each other, Rahmana Litzlan, playing a game. 10. Allow your kids to set a set amount of time per week on the device. By the way, it's not such a bad idea also for adults. Once they've used up their quota, they can't turn the device on. This has the added benefit of teaching them time management. 11, when your kids are not supposed to use their devices, make sure they're in your possession. He says it is lifnei iver, parshas kedoshim, lifnei iver lo sitein mechsha, before a blind man you should not put a stumbling block. He said, imagine leaving a cigarette in front of a smoker or an alcoholic drink in front of an alcoholic and telling them, don't partake of that. So if you leave the device in front of the child and you tell them they can't use it, it's very hard for the child to refrain from using the device. Kids should not be allowed to use their devices when they're doing anything else. Playing outside, no phone. Watching a video or ball game, no iPod. Try as hard as you can not to get irritated when they bring up electronics, which is very interesting. Remember, it's hard for them not to bring it up. Underlined, quote, treat it like an addiction, which goes to show you how far we have come in terms of our relationship with our devices. Show them you understand their request and even validate it. Try and distract them. Quote, it won't be easy. Try and take an interest in the games they play. It'll be a fun bonding experience when you discuss baby dragons and ogres together. Remember, he heard the two boys coming into yeshiva and they were talking about baby dragons, this, that. And when he said to them, you know, I remember learning about dragons in Maseches So-and-So, the kid said, Rabbi, I'm talking about really important stuff. Make sure you have a good filter. You should definitely block the internet. Remember, Rav Steinman said that a parent is not responsible if a child goes off the derech unless the parent gave the child an unfiltered phone. In that case, they are responsible. Your kids and you, now here we come to, and I said I'm going to talk about the point that you mentioned, okay? You said you've taken upon yourself to not check your phone before tefillah. So I will tell you that that's something that I took upon myself, I don't know, a year and a half ago, 2 years, and it totally changes your morning. It completely changes your morning. You and your, it says your kids, parentheses, and you should not use an app for davening or benching. I'm going to relate it to the inyan of tefillah. Unless absolutely necessary, use a sitter or a bencher. So it happened to be today I was in the bank, and I was waiting a while. I spoke last week about not having to go to the bank because the Chase app. Today I had to go to the bank. So I was waiting quite a while to be served, and I did not have, I had my little purse, I didn't have my tilm, I didn't have my chumash, so I was using my phone for tehillim. I mean, I figured it was better than standing there and doing really nothing. I didn't check any messages that came in, but use a sitter or a bencher unless absolutely necessary. Do not use an app for davening or benching, because what does happen is the messages come in on top, the phone's going to be vibrating, you're going to tell yourself, don't look at the top of the screen, your eyes are going to go to the top of the screen, now who am I talking to, Hashem or the person who just texted me? Which leads me to the idea, and tonight's shiur is once again a compilation of Torah sources and secular sources, which we're going to come to soon, what I call first daven and then check the news. And I'm basing this on a ha'ara from Sefer Bereishis, because we know hafoch ba v'hafoch ba dekula ba, everything is in Torah, Perek Avos and the Perek Hey, which we're going to read the Shabbos. So it's very interesting. I'm going to show you where it is. So in Parak Yud Ches of Sefer Bereishis, Parashas Vayera, okay, the Malachim come and they visit Avram Avinu. And they tell Avram, three Malachim come, you're going to have a Refuah Shalema, and your wife is going to have a baby this time next year, and one is going to destroy Sodom and Amorah, and Avram serves them, etc., etc. Okay, they get up and they leave, because remember, one of them is going to destroy Sodom and Amorah. And Hashem says, should I hide from Avram what I am about to do? Avram will be a great nation. All the families of the earth will be blessed through him. Okay. So Hashem tells him that the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is very great. And what happens? Avram starts to daven. Okay. The Malachim are going to Sodom. They have a job to destroy it. And Avram starts to daven. Vayigash Avram vayomer. Avram comes close. And Rashi says, that's Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Rashi says, Vayigash Avram, Matzinu Hagasha Lamachama. The term Hagasha can be used in terms of getting ready to go to war. Hagasha Lamachama. Hagasha Lepius, coming close for appeasement. And finally, Hagasha Letfila, coming close to pray. And Rashi says Avraham Avinu did all three things. He came close to battle with God. He's going to battle to save the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. So this is obviously very important to him. Hagasha Lepius, he's going close to appease God. And Hagasha Letfila, he's going to daven for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. So Rashi says that he did all three things. Are you coming? Awesome. Welcome. We're in Parashas Vayera, when Avraham Avinu is getting ready to daven for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Can I ask you a question? I don't want to make her uncomfortable. Can I ask you a question? What's your name again?
Rifki.
Rifki? You're finishing eighth grade, right? Do you have a phone? You do have a phone. Okay. I'm just curious. You can't count it a poll. There's one eighth grade graduate here, Mazel Tov. I don't think that's a poll. I think all the adults are going to answer in the affirmative. Okay, I was interested. So let's go. So this is relevant to you as well. Rifki? Okay, it's relevant to all of us, including Rifki. I have to call your mother. I'm so impressed. It's unbelievable. Last week, Rifki had an exam, so she couldn't stay. Baruch Hashem, this week she's here. Are you going away for the summer? Oh, we're here the whole summer. Okay, Be'ezra Hashem. So Avram, Vayigash Avram. Avram comes close. Hagasha Litfila, Hagasha Lepius, and Hagasha Lamachama. I said Rashi backwards. He comes close for battle. He comes close to God, to Davin, and he comes close to appease Hashem. Tefila, Melchama, and Pius. Okay? So he starts to negotiate. You know, if there's 50 righteous in the ear, are you going to destroy them? God forbid you should do such a thing. You're going to put to death its tzaddik with the Rasha. So Hashem says, you're right. If I find 50 people in Sodom, I'm not going to destroy them. So then Avram says, I don't know. I've just started to talk to you. I'm offer of Eifer. Maybe it'll be 50 minus 5. Interesting way of negotiating. It sounds like a higher number. He doesn't say 45. 50 minus 5. Well, you destroy the city because of those 5. Hashem says, no, if there's 45, I won't destroy. And he continues and he says, maybe 40. Hashem says, if there's 40, I'm going to save them. And Avraham Avinu says, please don't be mad and be, but maybe you'll find 30 tzaddikim. And Hashem says, oh, if I find 30, I'm not going to destroy them. I've just begun to talk. Maybe you'll find 20, I won't destroy them. And he says, please don't be mad at me, Hashem, but I'm going to talk again. Maybe you'll find 10 tzaddikim. So he says, if there's 10, I won't destroy. That's a minion. Okay, Hashem went, he finished speaking to Avram. So they had finished the conversation. Avram is Hagashal and Mechama. He feels very strongly about this. This is very important to him. His nephew Lo lives in the city. It's very important to him. He comes close for war. He's going to battle God. Hagasha l'pius, he's going to appease God. Hagasha l'tfila, he's going to pray to God. And they finish, Vayeyech Hashem kasher kila l'daber. So Targum Unkus never assigns anthropomorphic qualities to God. Unkus says, V'istalek yekarad Hashem, the essence of God departed. You don't say God left. God's presence departed. When he finished speaking to Avram, and Avram shavlim komo. Avram went home. He goes back to the tent. Him and Sarah have a lachayim. We just heard they're going to have a baby. Shav ashuv keis chayav. Vine ben lasari ishtacha. Everything is wonderful. They're making a kiddush. God leaves. Avram leaves. And now we come to Perek Yud Tes. The malachim come, and that very day Lot was appointed chief court justice. And they have the whole story with Lot welcoming the guest. Fine. I don't do anything to the guests. You could have my daughters. Everyone's banging down the door. The malachim have to schlep Lot out, one of the only four shalshalot in the Torah. Vayisma ma, Lot delays. He wants to leave this place of tumah, but he doesn't really want to leave this place of tumah. Okay, so taka. The wife turns into a pillar of salt. Vahashem himtir al Sodom v'almor gafris ve'ish. God rained down upon Sodom and Amorah sulfur and fire. Me'es Hashem minashamayim. Destroy. So what happened to Avram's tefilos? At least for Sodom and Gomorrah, there's many drashim, and they went for the future. I'm not talking about that right now. For tonight's shir, for purposes of tonight's shir, what happened to his tefilos? Don't destroy them for 50, 50 minus 5, 40, 30, 20, 10. Hagashal tefilah, hagashal pias, hagashal mechama. What happens to Sodom and Gomorrah? Finished. Finished. Vayahafoch es harim ha'el. God overturned these cities, completely overturned. Ve'es kol kikar, the entire plain, the entire valley, ve'es kol yoshvei ha'arim b'tzemech ha'adama, utter destruction. The people are overturned, the cities are overturned, the grass of the field is overturned, the wife turns around, she becomes a pillar of salt. Oh, 1927, Yud Tes Chof Zayin. Listen very carefully. Vayashkem Avram, when I realized this insight, that's when I stopped checking my phone before I davened. Vayashkem Avram b'boker. Avram woke up early in the morning. Al hamakom asher amad sham es pnei Hashem, to the place where he stood before God. What does Rashi? What not Rashi? What does the Gemara say on that pasuk? Vayashkim Avram b'boker al hamakom asher amad sham es pnei Hashem. Avram woke up early in the morning and he went to the place where he stood before God. So what does the Gemara say? Maseches Brachos chavav amad beis. The Gemara says that Avram was misakin tefila shachos. This is the proof that Avram established the morning prayer. There's three different times in the story of the life of Avram. We're told Vayashkim Avram Baboker. He woke up early. What are the other times? What? One by the Akedah, Nizdari's the mitzvah. He had alacrity for the mitzvah, Perichov base. The other time is Perichov Aleph, when he has to send away Hagar and Yishmael. You said that? Well, you're wearing a mask, so forget it. I didn't hear you, Joanna. What?
To send off Yishmael.
Okay, I didn't hear. But you still got the points. If you want to... It's common, just remove it from me, because otherwise it's hopeless. So the Gemara says, "Ein amida ela lashon tefila." Vayashkem Avram b'boker ala makom asher amad sham es pnei Hashem. To stand is tefila. In fact, the Gemara refers to tefila as amida. The amida is what we call the Shemona Esrei. When the Gemara talks about tefila, they talk about amida. To stand before God is to say the Shemona Esrei.
Yeah. Amad, was Moshe davening then?
No. I mean, maybe there's a source that brings it down. To my knowledge, no. I just think, I don't know. It could be there's a Medrash somewhere that says he was davening. If it is, I don't know. I don't know. Hashem approached him. We don't see he's davening. He's, in fact, trying to get away from God. What are you nuts? I'm going to free the Jews, send my brother. I can't talk. I have a speech impediment. People believe in me. At that moment, Hashem has even introduced himself or told him the purpose of why he's there. The first thing he says is, remove your shoes. The ground is holy. So Moshe wasn't davening. Moshe doesn't even want to be there talking to God. I'm minding my business with the sheep. What are you confronting me for? Anyway, so the Gemara says, Ein amida ala lashon tefila. And this pasuk, Bereishis 19:27, Yud Tes Chav Zayin, is the source for Avram was Misakin Tefilas Shachris. Watch the source for Yitzchak was Misakin Tefilas Mincha, Parshas Chayei Sarah 24:63. Chav Dalet Samech Gimel, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basada Lifnot Erev, Vayisa Eina, Vayar Vihine Hagmalim Baim. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach, Sin Vavches, Ein Sicha Elo Lashon Tefila. Yitzchak established the afternoon prayer. Both Rashi and Unkus over there to 24:63 say that Yitzchak established the afternoon prayer. What about Yaakov? When did he daven Maariv? Arvis? before the famous dream, Parshas Vayetze, Perachav Ches, Pasuk Yud Yud Aleph. So the patriarchs, the Avos, established the three prayers. Avram established Shachris. Yitzchak established Mincha. It doesn't mean they picked up the Siddur and Davin, the Nusach that we have today. They established the idea that a Jew must connect with God in the morning, must connect with God. The first thing you do in the morning is not check the news. I call it check first Davin, then check the news. I'm still getting there. The first thing you do in the morning is connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. In the afternoon, when you're so busy and you forget Hashem's in charge because you're doing a zillion things, stop. Hashem's in charge. And Arvis, when it's dark and you're afraid before you go back, so you Davin. So if I were Avram and I went to sleep after he clearly cares about the people of Sodom and Gomorrah very, very much, and he goes for battle, Melchama, he goes for pious appeasement, he goes for tefillah prayer. And if I were Avraham Avinu, first of all, I probably wouldn't have slept the whole night. Okay, I would be very nervous. What's going to happen in the morning? I don't know, maybe not you, but me, sometimes, somehow, whatever I'm thinking about during the day, if I'm nervous about something, it's maximized at night. It grows exponentially. It's like the monster out of the bed during the day was somewhere in the subconscious. You wake up to use the facilities. That's it. Now I'm up. Okay, maybe not you, me. So if I was Avraham Avinu, I wouldn't be sleeping the whole night. Because why? I just am for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm the Bechinas Chesed. Al Shloshal Dvarim Olam Omeid, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Mishnah, Beza, Pirkei Avos, Al Torah, Vavodok, Milas Chesedim. The world is upheld on Torah. That corresponds to Yaakov, the Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. Avoda corresponds to Yitzchak, who was the Korban and then the man of Tefillah. And Gemilas Chesed corresponds to the pillar of Avraham Avinu, who holds up the world. He was the man of Gemilas Chesed, doing for others par excellence. He spent his whole life taking care of other people. Dusty nomadic Arabs, I'll take care of you. Lot, captured in battle, Perek Yedal, it's your fault. Who told you to go live in Sodom? I should go to war for you. I'm not a warrior. He goes to free him. Vayita Esha Beber Shava, Achila Shasiel Aviyah. He's taking care of the whole world. So he cares very much about Sodom and Amorah. Clearly he does. So I wouldn't have slept all night. And if I did sleep, I would certainly go check what happened to Sodom and Amorah before I davened. What happened? I must know what happened. So listen what Avram does. The cities are overturned. Everything is destroyed. The vegetation, the people, the inhabitants, it's gone. The wife turns to salt. Vayashkim Avram baboker. Avram woke up early in the morning. Al hamakom asher amad sham es pnei Hashem, to the place where he stood before God. And then what did I just read to you from the Chumash? First, he established Tefillah Shachris. Then, he gazed out over the face of Sodom and Gomorrah, and over the whole face of the earth, and the lands of the plain. And he sees that it's smoking like the smoke of a lime pit. What's the order of the two sequences? What's the sequence of the two verses? What does he do first? He wakes up and he davens Tefillah Shachris. What does he do next? I'm going to check the news. The whole world is destroyed. But I'm going to daven first. Because Hashem is in charge. And the fact that it says Vayashkin, by the way, means he was sleeping. And he woke up means he wasn't up the whole night sittering. It means he was able to sleep. And then he woke up. And then he established Tefillah Shachris. And only then he looked over the plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, so he didn't have an iPhone to check. And he didn't have a TV to turn on like they did in the 60s. And what came between the 60s and now, the iPhone? I don't know. The fax machine? He didn't have another way of checking the news. He had to go out to the field and look over the surface of the plain and actually see what happened. I would first check the news, pick up my phone. God, wait 5 minutes. I'll be right back. But you all know 5 minutes doesn't turn into 5 minutes because first you check the news, and then you check WhatsApp, and then you check iMessage, and then you check email, and then you check the weather because I have to know what I'm supposed to wear, and do we need rain jackets? And then you check Twitter and Instagram, and then by the time you know 45 minutes passed, and you know the whole news, but you didn't. Davin, and now it's time to leave the house. Vayashkim Avram Baboker. From here, Chazal Darshan, that Avram was Masak in Tefillah Shachris. So if you want a chizuk for your Kabbalah, and you didn't know what I was teaching tonight, here it is. Then, Pasuk Chavches, then, Vayashkif al Pnei Sodom v'Amora, I'll call Pnei Eretz HaKikar. Then he went out to say, now let me see what happens. What's a priority in our life? To talk to God or to talk to people on my phone? And he saw the taka, his tefillos, in the moment were not accepted. I'm not talking about the long term. I'm not talking about they saved Lot. I'm not talking about Malach HaMashiach was born from the union in the cave. I'm talking about the Pashup Pshah. Pashup Pshah was he davened for Stam and Mer to be saved, and they weren't saved. But he was so calm. He had such ease in his mind in the morning that he did not have to go out to run to check the news. And obviously, first of all, you see everything's in the Torah. And obviously, this has very, very practical and very real ramifications. And Mr. Haskell, for all of us, what's our priority in the morning when we wake up? I assume everyone says Modani first, I hope. And I think we wash until Sedayim and use the facilities and make a couple brachos. But before or after that, what comes next? It's a good kasha. I can't hear. Maybe some people. I heard Rabbi Shai Shechter give a whole shiur on that. The halachos of what you're allowed to drink before you daven. Actually, ask your local Orthodox rabbi. I'm not a rav, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Hashkafically, at least, not halachically. Drinking a coffee before you daven is hashkafically better than going to your phone, because we all know there's going to be 5 WhatsApps or 7 WhatsApps and memes and videos. Do you have WhatsApp? You have WhatsApp. And it becomes a real struggle.
She does.
What did she say?
You have WhatsApp? Not just messages?
Us too.
What are you saying? I can't hear.
I'm asking her if she has WhatsApp.
She said yes.
Us too. That's how we're all here.
What?
Us too. That's how we're all here.
Oh, you want to be added to the Shia group? You'll know when we meet. Okay, so remember what we said last time from the wandering Jew. Again, I told you, I have no idea who this guy is, okay? From Micha Goodman. As smartphones make excellent servants and terrible masters. I said this last time, I know. As a servant, a smartphone saves us time. As a master over us, it swallows up our time. As a servant, it strengthens our relationships. So we said, someone's long distance and you can't see them and you're able to FaceTime and keep your family connection, so that helps you. And as a master, it disrupts our relationships. So I want to ask you something, please, Rifki, even though I said no comments. I want to ask you a question. It's very interesting to have the perspective of the other generation, a different generation here. What do you think about what we're saying? You have to talk loud for me, okay? What did she say? Someone has to help me.
I think it's good. What's good? The idea of...
The end? Is it something that you think is realistic? Is what I'm saying true? You could. I'm not insulted. I'm just interested in your perspective. Well, she made me never try it. I don't know. But I'm just asking, does it make sense? You're a different generation than all of us. Does what we're saying make sense to you? I mean, you're Baruch Hashem graduating with a Torah education. So, I mean, you're familiar with, you know, the Chumash and Avraham Avinu. And you look at the Pesukim that way. Does it make sense to you from your generation what we're saying? I'm asking a serious question. Yeah. So I think it's very important. And really, I didn't know what you were going to say. You didn't know what Simon Geffen was going to come in and say, this is my Kabbalah. That was mamish prepared. Yes.
So I recently got a smartphone, but this is my phone. I use a smartphone as like Wi-Fi or WhatsApp.
Okay, so people have to make their own choices.
No, I'm just saying I separated.
Okay. Everyone has to make their choices. For me, that's not realistic. For me, I wouldn't be able to do that. What? Right.
I'm just saying that something that
right. So that's why I said this year speaks to everybody on their own level.
People don't understand it and they question me like, what's the difference? It's a difference because I don't have it with me now. And I don't always have it with me and I don't always have it on. So I can turn it off.
Okay. We could turn off our phones also. We could put it on airplane mode. Okay. Everyone has their own.
Right,
okay, I understand. Everyone has their own boundary Everyone has their own gedar. Some people are going to take upon themselves nothing after this year. I'm not judging anyone. There's one Diane Amos, it's not me. Some people say I'm not going to check my phone before I daven shachar. Some people say I'm going to cut off 5 minutes a day. Some say I'll turn it off in this instance. When I'm at the levaya, I won't clean out my mailbox. Okay, so I don't know. That's why I said that this year is individual, and I really want to present the material that I've prepared, and I understand it's a touchy subject, and I understand there's a lot of opinions into it, but I think that the Torah, it's very, very strong musar. It's not just that Avraham was misalkin shachris. It's first that he was misalkin shachris. He established the morning prayer, and then he went about doing everything else with his day. Going back to Rabbi Yitzi Ross, he has one more nakuda, number 18. Of most importance, be a good role model when it comes to driving and texting. Whether you're a child with your parents in the car, whether you're a parent or a grandparent with your child or grandchild in the car, whether you're giving a neighbor a ride, whether you're doing a chesed, whoever's in the car with you, it doesn't have to be a blood relative. And sometimes you could ask the perspective of the kids. I'm not going to ask you, what is your parents' behavior when they're driving? Of most importance, this is the last one from Abba Yitzi Ras, be a good role model when it comes to driving and texting. Whatever you do in the car, the passenger, whether it's your child, grandchild, spouse, friend, they're going to see what you're doing. Resist the urge. Remember, we started last time with the guy who said, I started last time with Chance. His first name was Chance. I don't even remember the second name, but I don't have that piece here for tonight's year. His name was Chance. Chance Both. And he said, the last text he sent before he went off the cliff was, I better stop texting. I think I'm going to die. And then what happened? He went off the cliff. So be a good role model when it comes to driving and texting. Put your phone away when you're driving. Even if it's a red light, ! Remember, your kids are very perceptive. They will notice if you practice this dangerous behavior. Soon enough, they will be teen drivers. And we do not want them to pick up this extremely terrible and destructive behavior that you are modeling. He ends this piece. It's on yidparenting.com/blog/electronics part 2. Remember, I told you I had to search a little bit on the site to find his piece on this. With the help of Hashem, we will continue to raise our children to be mentioned. Have a great Shabbos. So Elishava Shlaim's not here, but after last week's shiur, she sent me this email, article really, copy of an article from 2014. So I mentioned again, like last week, this is a compilation of Torah sources and secular sources. So this is clearly not just something that we are struggling with, but it's something that the whole world is struggling with. I don't know if the whole world is trying to work on it or not, but as Torah observant Jews, we should certainly be at least trying to work on it, whatever the Kabbalah is. Kol Kabbalah Hashem Shabbat Tar Messiah. Also, we spoke last time about the pinprick. As long as it's real, Hashem will help you. So Elishava Shlam, who is not here, but I thank her for sending this to me, sent me this following piece. Okay? It's called Screen Time. Steve Jobs was a low-tech parent. Steve Jobs was the founder of Apple. Okay? Monday, September 15, 2014. When Steve Jobs was running Apple, he was known to call journalists to either pat them on the back for a recent article they wrote, or more often than not, explain to the journalist how they got the article wrong. I was on the receiving end of a few of these calls from Steve Jobs, but nothing shocked me more than something he said to me in late 2010, after he finished chewing my ear off for something I had written about a shortcoming to an iPad. So this Nick Bilton wrote something negative about an iPad, and Steve Jobs called him up to blast him for the bad review. "So, your kids must love the iPad," I asked Jobs, trying to change the subject. The company's first tablet was just hitting the shelves. "They haven't used it," he told me. "We limit how much technology our kids use at home." I'm sure I responded with a gasp, that's what it says here, and dumbfounded silence. I had imagined that Jobs' house was like a paradise. The walls were giant touch screens. The dining table was made from tiles of iPads. iPads were handed out to the guests like chocolates on a pillow. "No," Mr. Jobs told me, "not even close." Since then, I've met a number of technology chief executives and venture capitalists who say similar things. They strictly limit their children's screen time, often banning gadgets on school nights and allocating time limits on weekends. I was perplexed by this parenting style. After all, most parents seem to take the opposite approach, letting their children bathe in the glow of tablets. By the way, Adults also bathe in the glow of tablets, smartphones, and computers all day and all night. Yet these tech CEOs seem to know something that the rest of us do not. Chris Anderson, the former editor of Wired and now chief executive of 3D Robotics. Again, this is from 2014, so I'm not sure where he is at this point, but you get the point. A drone maker has instituted time limits and parental controls on every device in his home. My kids accuse me and my wife of being fascists, he says, and overly concerned about tech. They say none of their friends have the same rules. He has 5 children, ages 6 through 17. That's because we have seen the dangers of technology firsthand. I've seen it myself. I don't want to happen to my kids. And not everyone here is raising children, whether because of your position in life or your age in life. And I think that this speaks to us. I don't only think this is about children. I think it's about grown-ups who the device becomes like a third hand, or I don't know, the second hand, and you're left with one hand because one hand is always holding a device. And it's about us. It's about our relationship with technology. It's about our behavior. It's about am I bathing in the glow of the screen? The dangers he is referring to include exposure to harmful content, like unsnears things. It doesn't actually say that in the article. Bullying from other kids. It's the New York Times. Bullying from other kids. By the way, they talk about cyberbullying. It's much worse now than they say than ever because the child can never get away. It used to be the home was a safe haven. The child would leave school and at least go home. And now, Rahman al-Islam, because of cyberbullying, this is progress, the child can never even get away. And perhaps worst of all, quote, becoming addicted to the devices just like their parents. So what this article about Steve Jobs, written by Nick Bilton, really echoes what we read from Rabbi Yitzi Ross. It's not just the children who are struggling, it's all of us who are struggling. Alex Constantinople, the chief executive of the Outcast Agency, which is a tech-focused communications and marketing firm, said her youngest son, who is five, is never allowed to use gadgets during the week. Today we start them at 1.5 and 2, 5. And her older children, 10 or 13, are allowed only 30 minutes a day on school nights. Evan Williams, a founder on Blog, Twitter, and Medium, and his wife say that instead of iPads, their two young boys have hundreds of books. Yes, physical ones. They can pick up and read anytime. I'm not telling anyone had a parent or had a grandparent. I'm not telling you what to do in your house. I think that this, what we read in the Sefer about being enslaved and we would rather be enslaved than free is perhaps more relevant and prevalent in our day and age of technology than ever before because technology has become something we carry with us and can never get away from. So how do tech mom and dads determine the proper boundary? Usually it's set by age. Children under 10, this is interesting, I don't know if this is true. Children under 10 seem to be the most susceptible to becoming addicted. I don't know if that's true because I don't know.
No, I wonder how those numbers have changed now, especially in school. How did the numbers change in school being online? Like I wonder if
So it's very interesting you're saying that because I'm not going to say her by name, but someone's here last week who emailed me after listening to the shiur, and she is here tonight. And she said exactly what you're saying, that school going online, it drives her crazy. She says, I could go on and on and on with this topic in her email, but she said since the schools went online, she finds it's even worse in the grandkids because now they're constantly connected and the schools no longer enforce it because everything went remote. So it's very interesting your point you bring up, and one grandmother who's here tonight in the Zoom room brought that up to me. And she said that that's a problem. So Leslie Gold, founder and chief executive of the Sutherland Gold Group, tech, media relations, and analytic company, says, we have a strict no screen time during the week for our kids, but you do have to make allowances as they get older and they'll need a computer for school. So it's a catch-22. Certainly under COVID, the kids had to have devices. And in fact, some kids who perhaps never even saw devices were now on devices the whole entire day. I know someone who has a little 2-year-old who qualified for speech therapy in the middle of COVID, really needed speech therapy. Baruch Hashem, a otherwise normally developing child. So they approved, the child is 2, speech therapy for a 2-year-old on Zoom, on a tablet. Besides for the fact that she said,
we don't have
This is already after the vaccines, okay? The two parents in the house were vaccinated. The therapist was a frontline worker was vaccinated. The county would not approve it. Besides the fact that she said it was completely pointless, because what could you teach a two-year-old in terms of speech therapy over Zoom? Besides, and the therapist being paid for this, you could turn on Sesame Street. She had to stop it. She stopped it. She went to private pay because the child really needed therapy. Why? Because the child started to freak out after the child got used to it. When the session was over and the tablet had to be put away, the child was very upset because they became to enjoy the effects of bathing in the glow of the screen and not wanting to be put away. So I'm talking about as young as two. I'm not talking about an eighth grader. I'm not talking about a 10th grader. I'm not talking about a fourth grader. I'm talking about giving a two-year-old. So imagine the effects of how young we are inculcating this whole culture into our children. Some parents forbid teenagers from using social networks. Okay? As parents point out, things online will haunt them later in life. That's not only about kids. It's about adults. Whatever you put online is there forever. I hung it up over my desk. It's an article by Attorney Braffman. And he said in the last, I should have brought the article as a source for tonight's year. It was in the Jewish Home maybe a year or 2 years ago. He said, in the last 10 to 15 years, the majority of cases rest upon virtual communication. It's no longer about, you know, investigating, finding clues. It's about what you virtually communicated. And Ben Braffman says, you can smash your computer and throw it in the ocean, and we can retrieve what you posted online. So people can destroy their own lives. And we've become so addicted, we don't even realize. Okay. Many in tech wait until their child is 14. There is one rule that is universal among the tech parents I polled. Rule number one, there are no screens in the bedroom, period, ever. I'm going to repeat that. And I want everyone to think about their own rule, not for their children, for themselves. What is someone saying? Oh. There is one rule that is universal among the tech parents that I polled, and that is, quote, rule number one, there are no screens in the bedroom, period, ever. And I think that's not only about kids, I think that's about where we leave our devices at the end of the day and how far they come with us, if into the bedroom, if they're downstairs, if they're upstairs, if they come with us at all. Okay, so I'm just skipping a little. Some say too much time limits could have adverse effects on children. On the other hand, Mr. Costolo, chief executive of Twitter, said, when I was at the University of Michigan, there was a guy who lived in the dorm next to me. He had cases and cases of Coca-Cola and other sodas in his room. I later found out his parents never let him have soda when he was growing up. So he was making up for lost time with having tons of Coke. So his point, the chief executive of Twitter, is if you ban it entirely, what problems does it cause as a rebound effect? That's something today, I don't know if it, especially in our circles, maybe in some other circles, if it can be banned entirely, but about limits. And it's not only about kids and their limits. Every evening, Steve Jobs made a point of having dinner at a big long table in the kitchen. They discussed books and history and a variety of things. No one ever pulled out an iPad or computer or other device. So I think, whether it's Rabbi Yossi Ross, Shlita, or Lahavdil, I'm sorry, this article from the New York Times, across the spectrum, we all have to ask ourselves, where do I stand? Going all the way back to Avram Avinu. Get it, pun intended, where do I stand? Amad Hashem, Espanay Hashem. What's my relationship? What's the last thing I do at night? What's the first thing I do in the morning? Where does my device stay? What is behavior am I modeling for my children or my family when I'm driving, when I'm at the dinner table, when I'm cooking supper? Is it always on me? Is it my extension of my hand? And it's a big question. I'm just going to end, even though our time's really up, with one more vart, short vart. I'm going to try and make it short. It's not really short. I should say it next week. Should I say it tonight or next week?
You have a captive audience.
What?
Yeah, you have a captive audience.
Okay. So the Pasuk tells us in Mishpatim, okay, Perichof Dalad, Pasuk Yadbiz, Parshas Mishpatim, which is the narrative at Har Sinai. Vayom Hashem el Moshe, Elei Elai Hahara Vehei Hashem. God said to Moshe, ascend up to me, up to the mountain, and be there. Ve'eten Ve'etna lecha es luchas ha'aven, v'ha'torah v'ha'mitzvah sher katafti lehorsam. I will give you the luchos of stone and the Torah and the mitzvah that I wrote to instruct them. So the Kotzke points out, the Kotzke Rebbe Zatzal, Zichus v'yagin aleinu, v'yomer Hashem el Moshe, alei elai ha'hara, that's all it should say, ascend to me up the mountain, and then it should say, and I will give you the stone tablets, the luchos, and the Torah, and the mitzvah, rashis, Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat that I wrote, lehorosam, lehora, mora, Torah, to instruct them. So that's v'hei Hashem, and be there. Obviously, if Moshe ascends the mountain of Sinai, he's going to be there. So what's the pshat? And this is way before, hundreds of years before the advent of technology. So the Kotzke said, of course, Moshe sends the mountain Vehei Hashem, but nothing in the Torah is superfluous. So there's no extra words. Shemos 24:12. So what does it mean, be there? It means be there. Not physically be there. Of course you're going to physically be there. It means be present in the moment. I'm teaching you Torah. I'm talking to you about Torah and mitzvah, Torah shebichtav, Torah shebal peh, the written law and the oral law. I'm telling you about the Torah that I wrote to instruct the people. You're going to go be a teacher. Be there. Be present in the moment. Be attentive. Don't only be physically present. Be cognitively present. Be emotionally present. Be psychologically present. One of my children told us over the duration of this year that they have a teacher who would stand at the podium at the lectern and tell them to read a paragraph or whatever and scroll through their phone. So when we approached the principal, we were not believed, and my child was not believed. And my child said, I wish I could take my phone to school to video the teacher's behavior so that they would believe me without the teacher's doing. So how far has our slavery to these devices gone? God said to Moses, if you're going to come up to me, if you're going to teach a class, if you're going to sit at the dinner table, if you're going to talk to your children, if you're going to go out with your spouse, be there. It doesn't only mean physical. Of course Moshe was physically there. He climbed the mountain, so he was on the top of our Sinai. There's a lot more to being there than being physically present. We have to be attentive. We have to be cognitively aware of our surroundings. You know, you're scrolling, you're saying, yeah, when someone's talking to you, you never did that in your life. I'm alone. Only Michal Horitz has done that. Yeah, 1 second. I just have to finish the text. If the shirim don't speak to you, then you're all gadol, not being facetious, or not being intellectually honest. Because I believe very strongly that on some degree, everybody has to work on their relationship with technology. And we have to learn, and the sources are in Chumash. I ask him, Avram Baboker, first I'm going to daven. Whatever happened to Stom and Amara happens to Stom and Amara. It was destroyed, okay, it's not my business. That's up to God. First I'm going to pray, then I'll go check the news. And if you're going up the mountain, hey Yesham, don't talk to your kids and you're saying, I just have to finish the text. I've done it also. I'm not giving you Musar. I'm a normal person. I have an iPhone in my bag. It's a challenge. Be cognitively, emotionally, and psychologically present. Then I can give you the Luchas Ha'aven. Then I could give you the Torah and Mitzvah. Then you can go down and teach Lahorasam to teach the people. Okay, Rivki, I'm interested in your thoughts. No, I'm mamish interested. We're all interested. Yes, I've seen that also. People walking with children in a carriage and the child is holding a tablet. I've seen that. Yes, okay, Rivki. What did she say? Can't hear you. Stand, tell me. She agrees. How does it feel from being... No.
She thinks she agrees.
She thinks she agrees.
So what thing don't you think you agree on?
No, I don't know if that's what she means. I think she's just saying, I think I agree. What is it like from your perspective as the child when you hear this or perceive this or think about adults and then you hear a shir like this? You don't want me to put you on the spot and ask you questions?
She'll think about it. You can always write her a note.
You don't want to comment?
Send us an email. Text us.
Okay, if she comes back next week, Bezrat Hashem, then we know we did a good job. Okay, everybody, Le'ilui Nishmas, Miriam Frill, Miriam Baschai Mitzvah, Allah HaShalom. I wish everybody a week of Besuros Tovos. Nobody's listening to me. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. Call to Besuros Tovos. Thank you all.